460s, we freshmen, you know.
Uh-huh.
Those were tertianers, you know, senior in high school. They were somebody, and boy, I've probably mentioned that already before.
Yeah? Sure.
Huh? So those fellas, we always had afternoon classes, and when we got back from classes, we 460s all have to, in a row, bend over, and each one with his hairbrush gives a good whack. Every lousy afternoon. And it was repeatedly, my, it hurt so that I run out of the room, right across the hall into a great big bedroom, you know, a couple steps down. It was in the old part of the building, that was the newer part of the living room. But, and I'd fall in my bed and have a good ball. One, I came home for Christmas, one of the two times that I did get home for Christmas, those 6 years, that time and the last time, last year, when I went out and earned some money, husky corn, anyhow, these four men, they kept that up, that when I got home, I begged Dad to let me quit. But my dad, oh no, don't do that. You've always intended to be a pastor from a kid on already. Something like Tom always said early too.
I wonder, when did you decide to become a pastor?
Oh, as a boy already. I built a little church and I repeatedly, when Dad would be preaching, I'd remember the theme and the text and the parts.
Mm-hmm.
So I always looked up to my dad as a preacher, you know, and that was my wish all the time as I grew up with the young fella. And he said, oh no, don't do that. Maybe they'll be different. And sure enough, when I got back, there was never any hazing anymore like that. After Christmas, not a one made us bend over, make a right angle, as they would say. Make a right angle, bend over, you know, and then each one of the four gave each one of us four a good whack with their hair.
Wonder why
Gustav Cramer was the worst one.
Wonder why it changed so abruptly.
I can't figure that thing out. I didn't want to ask him either, and probably have them start over again.
Yeah.
But I was so happy because my dad urged me by no means to quit. The Keister was in my room too. He and Paul Eifert. He was a pastor in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Both he and his wife were killed in a car accident.
Mm. Boys, did Reverend Keister get the same treatment you did?
Well, I don't know. I was not in, and he was a different... Oh, no, though, those four... I don't think they did it so much the next year, because Keister came a year after I did. I don't remember that they had a lineup. What, there's only... Two sexies that year. The next year, you see,
uh-huh.
Practically the same ones came back. I was in that one room 6 years.
Well,
there was a Huffman with the room buck, as we called him. You know, the one who had the oversight of the whole thing. That the boys would sweep, you know, and keep the room in decent shape. And he was so good, and old Alfred Cramer, that was Gustav Cramer's brother, you know. He was 2 years ahead of Gustav. Gustav was a senior in high school, and Alfred was a sophomore in college.
Mm-hmm.
I always have to think, what is that? Because
yeah.
We start, see, they go backwards. Sexta, you mean that's six. That's the bottom one. Then quinta, five. the second year there, sophomore in high school, and quarta, four, you know, and tertia, that's the senior then in high school, so we called them tertioner. And then came secunda, second, you know, from the bottom, from, if you start from six, I don't know why they go backwards, from six up to, so to say, to prima, which is one, you know. So secunda and prima, those were then the two highest classes, freshman in college and sophomore in college. Now we only had two all those years until we started the senior college. And then some other colleges like St. Paul, and now Austin has made a four-year college above high school. You see, it was always going to go to college, which meant that in my day, practically everybody started from the bottom. Just a few came in.
Now it's the other way around. And
yeah, now they don't, in some places they don't, at least some probably have even cut out their high school, but I know Concordia still has high school, and I believe, I think Winfield too. Well, maybe they all do, I don't know, but a lot of them say, well, you see how I did, how we did in our own family. Paul started right down at the bottom, you know, freshman in high school. And Dick stayed home 2 years, and he was then sophomore in high school, no, junior in high school when he went to Winfield. And Ted, now we got to Houston, and Ted was confirmed, and he started at Lutheran High School and went there 2 years, and then, you know, we went out to the Navasota or Whitehall, and so Ted went one more year, 1 year at the high school in Navasota, and then for the senior year, he went to Austin.
Then we got to Dave, he went all the way through high school.
And when it came to senior, to Dave, yes, he started out in high school there, from the bottom, and he went all the way through high school and then to Austin. And I think if I'd have to do it over, I'd start from the tail end and keep them all at home during high school. But that was just the custom, you know, and to get a start right in that, in one of our institutions from the bottom up. Which at that time I think was probably a good thing, although I know going 400 years from home when you're only 13 years old,
that seems awful difficult.
Yeah, boy. That's awful young. I couldn't imagine.
And I don't think it was too good that it's the only boys who never got to associate with girls there, and so a person kind of feels, I don't know what you would say, it kind of bashful or... And at Concordia, those congregation of boys, they were so hateful to students. And we once had a big egg fight right on the street of town.
Oh, you mean the boys?
They were so mean to us.
The boys in town?
Well, the boys of the congregation, that's a large congregation, St. Paul's congregation. I guess that's how it happened that the college was called St. Paul's College, because Bill, the one who was president of the Western Dix District at that time, that was a big district when in 83, you know, two more years, then it'll be 100 years old. He was the pastor of that large congregation, and he pushed it, because there was only Fort Wayne, I guess, and Milwaukee. And they were just crying for men out in the prairie states, you know, pastors. And so And there's such a cluster of Lutheran congregations all around Concordia.
Mm-hmm.
Higginsville and Corder and Elm and Emma and Ernestville and Knobnoster and a number of more. There's just a lot of German some Riverside congregations,
yeah.
You know, they all pushed it through and did their part, you know, to get the thing going. I know even our time, ladies from the congregation, I know other neighboring congregations have party, and they come together and cook all kinds of cans full of fruit and of apple butter and some people would make sorghum, you know,
mm-hmm.
and bring a big batch of sorghum into the kitchen, into the cellar, you know. And we had, besides the Mopac, we had molasses, we had sorghum. Hey, that was really a treat sometimes.
Yeah,
not all sorghum was so good, but some was really good. Even when we had a gate, it was a regular fence, it wasn't a fancy fence, but the gate was, you know, that has a spring, you know, you kind of open it up, it's not what goes in, you know, push back, you know, and then you get through. And Frank got so smart, he would just wiggle his nose against the thing and push it open, and he pushed, it would work both ways, you know. He'd come in our yard because the grass was so much better in the house and church yard than in the cow and horse lot. It was quite a lengthy thing, but I would say about four or five hundred foot across, and then eighth of a mile long, and way past the church. Cemetery and the house in front, there was plenty of room in between. But when they had clipped them, there's all pretty well. The house was all nice and grass. He knew how to find that too. And Daisy was always so gentle, you know, she'd come walking right behind him. She never attempted to open anything herself. And then I was telling your mother too that Frank, he had a back, you know, that stood up about like this, you know, kind of a bony, something like that, you know, you'd be sitting on. Bony back, you know, all the way to the backbone, just made it, is where you sit. And Daisy was just all round and nice, always good buddy. I never had a saddle. We never bothered it either when he could ride. When Baldur was too small, he and I take the horses out, you know, down this road, you know, and had a rope about 20 foot long for each horse and tie them to a fence post, you know, where they eat a lot of nice bluegrass along the road.
Bluegrass?
When they're old, see, in the summertime when it was dry for a while, they didn't have too much in their yard, at least they thought they didn't. And so I sit on Daisy and take Frank along, you know. And later on, when Walter was big enough to go with me, especially then when the school lasted till the end of June, then started in September. And sometimes even in school time, over noon, you know, we'd eat in a hurry and then go and get the horses and Walter would get on Daisy with that nice round back. I want him to have her because I knew it was pretty hard for him to sit on that bony back of Frank. But we never trotted. When we had to go, say, about a quarter of a mile or even a half a mile, then I'd always get the horses galloping. And when you gallop, you know, you kind of swing along, but if you trot, 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 you know, you boom, 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 boom. Oh, that was harder than my feet. My tailbone. That hard, it's just as, actually that high, you know, the backbone. I don't know why he had such a high back. He's a good horse, a good pulling horse with days. They were fine feed. And I always had to feed them, you know, bed them. And also harness them and hitch them to my dad's buggy whenever he'd want to go to town or go to visit people, call on people. Yeah, that was my job, so I never had to do one bit of housework. I didn't have to wash any dishes, dry any dishes, and scrub no floor. That was great, but I had the outside work. I had to lead our cow down the row about a quarter of a mile down, then into a pasture that went into the neighbor's pasture. For a while they had three acres that was meant for the pastures, but then she'd go down, the creek went right through there, and she'd always slip down there and go out anyhow. So in the end we just let her go all the time, and sometimes she was away, but near three-fourths of a mile away there with the other cows of the neighbor, John Stoodheit. Anyhow, that's getting away from the ponies, but there was the cows.
Well, how old were you through that stretch of time when you had those ponies?
Well, I was only about a quarter year old when we left Stablehurst where Ryan was born. And so the first couple of years, I know I didn't ride any horses, but I don't know when I started, maybe about 7, 8 years, you know, I'd get used to the horses and feed the chickens. And we had a pig sometimes, feed that too. I even, from old lumber that was around, I built a nice little pig house too.
Oh, you built?
About 11, 12 years old. I don't know what this is. Yeah, that was about the time when I built my little church, you know.
Uh-huh.
But I guess around 11, 12, you know.
Oh.
But I think I rode that Daisy before. I was 10, I must have been 8, 9.
Uh-huh.
He was so tame, you know.
Uh-huh. It was.
Daisy.
But you know, one thing was funny. Well, I admit that to you, old Frank, you know, he was a feeling real peppy one time, and my brother Ryan was walking towards our toilet in the catty corner across the whole cow and horse lot, you know, from the house. And here, Frankie was just running, and right for Ryan. Boy, he took a big jump and jumped right over him, just like he was playing with him. Boy, I was scared. I thought he was going to run down. But he just took a big jump and jumped right over Ryan.
How
so
tall was he?
See, Ryan was just a little boy. Then maybe about 4 years old, and I was 8 or 5. He was so tall, but
was
Frank had right for him. And
Grandpa,
he didn't run him down. He just took a big jump.
Grandpa,
jump.
Was
huh?
he about this tall?
Oh, he must have been at least 4 or 5 years old.
Mm-hmm. Frank, would it jump about this tall?
Did he jump fences and things? I mean, did he jump otherwise?
I never had seen him jump like that the other time at all. I don't know what got into him. But one day, it was funny. Dad and Mom had gone someplace, and somehow the horses must have, with the buggy, must have been tied in the corn crib, the way I understood. And some of that, probably only one, and that came loose, and they came out, and then they had a runaway. They came running to our place, came in the gate that was wide open, went way up to the end of the lot, and came chasing right out and went off again to that place where my mother died. It's just like a real runaway. There's nobody in the buggy.
But they had the buggy hooked to them. They still were hooked up to the buggy.
Oh yeah, they were hooked to the buggy. They rounded it real nice into the gate, and they went up there and came back out, and out they went down the road before we could do anything about it.
My goodness. And then they went back to where
they
your dad
went back to the same place where they had been visiting about a mile west from us.
My goodness.
Went out the gate and then out west.
I saw
that too. I don't know who else was there that saw it, but it was so unusual.
Yeah.
We didn't know what to do. If we had sense, we'd have probably just closed the gate, but we didn't.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have enough sense to do it. I don't know who was there that saw it with me.
Well, you think as fast as they were going, they would have just tried to jump the gate or something if it was closed, or you think it would have stopped them?
I imagine they would have stopped
for the gate.
They would have
tried to stop. Well, Daisy just went right along with Frank.
Oh,
if he decided to run away, she'd run with
him. Yeah, she ran right with him. But they didn't hurt the buggy, nothing. Nobody in it.
<That's so
laughs>
strange.
I heard she's still away in a drunk.
I guess they were just lonesome and wanted to go home, and they
just ran home, and then they got home.
They came running into the yard and ran up. Out they went and west.
And then I guess they knew they were supposed to go back and pick them up yet, so they went back.
Where did they run home?
You often say about horse sense, like a pretty good sense. I guess Frank had that for sure.
Uh-huh.
And Daisy, good Daisy, she'd go right along with him, always behind him.
They were at the neighbor's when they ran home.
She knew if Frank got in and got to the feed, you know, she'd find it too.
Uh-huh.
Well, they knew to come back there,
right? Uh-huh. Right. Well,
that's the story.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Rodney would like to have, Rod and Cheryl would like to have
Me
some horses
too.
To ride,
and
Beth.
Not
Beth. Oh. They'll ride saddle, I'm sure, but
no, I want horse.
We had no saddle.
There's no such
story. Dad didn't ride. Right there, Dad used
that's
to ride when he was in Appleton City. When he went way down to deep water, he would go by horse and ride on horseback.
Dad, can you do what I used to do?
But he had a horse, and we didn't have a saddle.
Uh-huh.
See, when he had,
Dad,
when he was
this?
At Adams, when he was at Adams County, that's Wanda,
yeah.
Southwest
that's
of Hastings.
What
he had no need of a saddle, I guess. He had that.
Whoa.
Had the buggy.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
but I don't know if he had the horses then already. Maybe so. I don't know how old a horse's life is, because we had them for 9 years there, where I kind of grew up, and then during the next six years, both of them died.
Oh.
First Frank, and then Dad got one of those things, you know, would hitch just one horse to the top buggy, but then, my goodness, those buggies were so easy to pull that one horse could easily pull it.
Uh-huh.
I guess two of them, it's more fun, especially going uphill.
Uh-huh.
It's easier, like going to Johnson, you know, that went up and downhill, you know, and so often the whole stretch they would go in a trot, you know. We didn't all go step.
Yeah.
Most
when
of the time
Daisy
they'd be trotting along.
Uh-huh.
Grandpa, did you have a buggy that... It's like on Little House on the Prairie, whenever they have those covered buggies that you get inside those two doors, and then they have two seats on each side.
That's more like a carriage.
That's what we call carriage that time. But this is just a top buggy, just the top, you know, and these stems down here, you know.
Oh,
you'd have curtains for the side. Clip on, you know, if it'd be in the rain, but nothing for the front. It'd just the top would stick over, kind of like this, you know.
No,
you could see back and forth as you sit here.
Daisy,
yeah.
And just about so far it stuck out behind the seat, you know, where you could put things, set things in the back, uh-huh, like a suitcase or something.
Yeah.
If somebody be over the train.
Traveling, uh-huh.
Grandpa.
Yeah.
How'd Frank and Daisy die? Did they just get old and stuff?
Yeah, that's what I mean. They died while I was at home and all. Frank died first. During those 6 years, my dad left Nemours County in 1912, February, and then he resigned then 1918 in the spring, right after Easter. Mm-hmm. He went down to Lincoln, Kansas. Ernest, you know, and Clara had been married the summer before, mm-hmm, there was an empty house that a man had, and his younger son was a student at the college with me.
Uh-huh.
Now, the older one then got married after 3 years, and then they fixed up that house for him to live.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But it was so... See, Claire and Ernest and Old Meyer, they lived some south and about enough, about 6 miles that way, and so they had about 7 miles. They had about 10 miles in all to come. Uh-huh. And a mile south was that empty house. And so every Sunday they'd come by there anyhow to go to church, you know, and so they'd always take the whole come on.
Uh-huh.
And after 3 years, when that older son got married, the brother, older brother, the one that was at college with me, then they moved to town.
Uh-huh.
Well, because now, by that time, Don Bakke, Margaret's husband, had come down and gotten a job down there on the county roads with big machinery.
Gotta tell you something.
Yeah. So that's about it.
Well, is that when your dad, you said he resigned, was that when he was sick? What did you say he had?
In those years somewhere, I don't know, just not at the beginning, but towards the end of those 6 years, he was at a conference. The conference usually country congregations, you know.
Yeah.
And they'd be given a certain party in the congregation where maybe two of them would stay, maybe sometimes three and four, but usually at least two at one place. And they would, those people would usually let the pastors drive their horse, you know, and mostly a top buggies too.
Yeah.
And I just found out this time that there must have been maybe four people there, because one was sitting on the other's lap, you know.
Yeah.
Probably not too far to go.
Mm-hmm.
And the driver and the other one, when the horse were unmanageable, they jumped out safely. I don't know what happened with the other one, but Dad was underneath, you know, somebody sitting on his lap. Uh-huh. And he didn't get out, and when he then did try to jump out, his heel must have caught somewhere on the buggy and he was just dragged and bump, rocks and things, you know, and so he was conscious for quite a number of days. I was never told.
Uh-huh.
But Hattie told me at our reunion that it was shown after he had died that from being hit so hard, cracked a bone in his brain, and the splinter was rammed deeper into the brain somehow.
Uh-huh.
And that's why from there on he got so forgetful. And
yeah.
And he was one who never read his sermon. He always had it in his Bible, mm-hmm, but he'd always memorize real hard. And mm-hmm. Memorizing wasn't too hard for him until he, after this, for a couple, I think it must have been a couple of years yet when he still preached. But then
uh-huh.
he would just simply be blank, and he didn't know where he was. And And not being used to reading the Bible, the sermon, he just, well, he thought, I'm done for. And several times he had a nervous breakdown. I guess something like mom, dad too, or myself.
Yeah. Life must have been hard on ministers, huh?
Well, he was at the disadvantage because he came over here and went to the seminary, and then got back, and then got married, and he didn't. And then he was always in real purely German congregation. Never had to preach English. Yeah. He'd go to town, and he would get along. Mm-hmm. But even there, usually the town was mostly German. At least Johnson was the storekeeper. Dad never did preach English in his whole ministry. But he confirmed several young men who married a girl out of the congregation, and he could handle that. His pronunciation was not always like naturally wouldn't be. But the mother never did really talk any German.
She never did talk what?
She
always talked German.
Yeah, we were raised very German. We always, to the end. I believe I should quit. I had to. Thank you. See what time it is.
Yeah, we better go ahead with devotions, I guess. Well then, did after that, your dad resigned from the ministry completely then, and never did go back into it then? How old was he then?
No, Reverend Hoyer was pastor at Lincoln. At that time, he substituted for Hoyer, but that was so hard for him that he... It was only several times that he preached.
Mm-hmm. How old was he about when he resigned, when he retired?
Well, I guess he must have been about 56, 57.
Oh, so he was pretty young, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. That's what I say. It's such a shame.
If he had just known how to handle that problem, he probably could have stayed in the ministry longer, maybe. I mean, if they'd realized he had that in his brain, they could have taken it out.
If they had examined him better at that time, they probably would discover he could have had an operation.
But
I don't know how good the brain operations were in those days. You see, that was in the around 1915-16, when that happened.
What happened?
Oh, he had run away at conference, you know. He and several other men, you know, at conference, you know, you'd stay out with some members, you know, overnight, and evening and morning, meal, you know. And they were only in top buggy, but I think they brought in four into the top buggy, and the driver, he was sitting down, and somebody sat on his lap, and the other one, somebody said, when the horses were unmanageable and they couldn't control them, those two front guys jumped out. And maybe the second one, but Dad, when he tried to jump out, he was caught somehow with his heel and dragged for a long time down the road, you know, the rock road, you know, and he must have had some kind of break. He was unconscious for quite a number of days. They never wrote me that. I didn't find that out till after Dad had resigned, when he kind of... memory failing him so often, you know, when he tried to preach. First of all, it took him so long to memorize it like he used to, feel that he had it in his head. And then in the pulpit, his mind went blank, and he retired pretty early then, like I say. It was a shame.
When he died, they found out that he had a splinter from his skull being fractured. A splinter had rammed real deep into his brain.
My goodness.
And, you know.
How old was he when he died?
69.
Well, he lived quite a while, actually.
Yeah, he lived there. but he got more and more forgetful. And at the end, he had a clear time during the day, and then he had an off time. He didn't know where he was, and everything frightened him.
Yeah.
You see, when Don Botka was killed, then I hurried down there to... Dick was so young and Don didn't go along. I just drove down for his funeral. And then Don had come back and ran a grocery store, and then my folks came back to Gilead again from Lincoln. And my dad was so hard to keep in an evening. You know, he was so used to these long night gowns, you know. And he was so restless all the time in the evening. He always wanted to wander around outside, and that was so embarrassing for Mother, for one thing. And so at Don's funeral, Mother begged me to take them along. She thought way out in the country would be different even if he did go outside. So I brought him home. I hated like everything to do it for Mom, because Dick was so young, you know. And then when we had that, I don't know, for a month, for about a month, must be around a month, then he seemed to get more restless all the time. Even my mother said then, I don't know, I'm kind of afraid, I'd hate to see anything terrible happen. He wasn't ever violent when he was out of his mind, really, but things frightened him. They were just mowing outside, he could see the mower come, he was going to come run the house down, and he was so frightened, everything loomed up so.
Yeah, I can see.
He was not rational at all.
He was probably having a lot of pressure in his brain.
Because finally I had a little conference at Hastings, and I talked to Heilman and Dr. Dow. Dr. Dow, my professor at St. Louis, he happened to be there too. I talked to them, and they said by all means have the doctor declare that he needs to go to mental hospital. And so I had one of the pastors, who was not too far from me, to come so that I'd have somebody with me, kind of talk to Dad and help him. But Dad seemed to be at that time, so he didn't resolve it. The sheriff took him then and brought him to Hastings. And I went right after that. I took my mother, and we both drove to Hastings. And she stayed with Erna, Donald's second daughter, you know, all down in Erna.
Yeah.
She stayed there. And about a week later, I had a telephone call. The dad had a stroke. Dad said that once he felt so odd, he couldn't describe how it was. I bet he must have had a light stroke at that time. So I chased to Hastings right away, picked up Mother, and we went and stayed with Dad for maybe an hour or a little bit more. When we got there, we were at his bedside, and then they pretty soon they came in and had to do something with him, told us to get out. And they didn't let us in. We thought, surely don't take him that long. So finally I asked, can't we go in? We came 70, 80 miles here to see. I did. And so then they let us in, and then it wasn't too very long with that breathed his last.
Oh, so you did get back in, though, to see him. Was he conscious during that time, or was he not conscious?
But we couldn't talk to him. And somebody said there, he could talk English, but when I get to the time like that, he would say something German. They said, he always said, ich kann nicht. And Dad used to do that even before that. I can't, you know, I can't. somehow. But when they probably ask him to do something, he's like, Connick.
Uh-huh.
And that's what, I don't know, one of the attendants there told us he would use that there in the earlier days.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, then I did something I should never have done, but I don't know why. You know how I'm about phoning, and never in my whole life, we never had a phone.
Mm-hmm.
The only time I phoned when I would call up Mom from the SIM at St. Charles. And I even one time said, is Thecla there? And Grandpa said, Thecla? I said, is Thecla there?
You goofed up on her name.
You know, I knew it was Thecla, but I don't know why I said it. I can't explain why, because TH, you know. Maybe I don't think I want to be funny because I was too sure it would be funny with him, but he said, Thecla. I said, I mean Thecla. Anyhow, and so I neglected because I had to make arrangements right away with the funeral and engaged undertaker out of what town nearby, Hastings. And then I took Mother right to Gilead because there's where he's going to be buried because he'll be mm-hmm. buried on the Gladstone Cemetery, you know, 4 miles out of Gilead.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't call Mom to tell her that I'm taking Mother over, so Mom didn't know what was going on. Of course, I didn't stay there. I just took my mother there and then I came home.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it must have involved maybe that it got to be the next day.
Mm-hmm.
But first of all, I just felt so bad that I brought my folks there because
mm-hmm.
Mom, you know, having a little tiny...
Yeah.
She never resented it,
uh-huh.
but I hated like it. And still, I didn't know what to do. I wouldn't know to say no to Mother when she so pleaded with me.
Yeah,
out there, you know, out there in the country,
mm-hmm.
eighth of a mile from the road, you know, and all secluded there. If we did get outside at night, it wouldn't be quite as bad as when you got neighbors around
mm-hmm.
both sides. So that's the way it was out there that time.
Mm-hmm.
But Mom did then go to the funeral, Mom, and the kids, we all went to the funeral.
Uh-huh.
You see, John, that was, I don't know how many, probably, what could it be 6 weeks or probably been a couple of months, I guess. I forget that, when John was killed and when mm-hmm. Dad then died.
But it was fairly close together, wasn't it?
It could be about 7, 8, 9 weeks apart, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because, 7, 8, because we kept them, I don't know the month, but it's one thing I remember, Dad was always so afraid of getting too big a thing in his mouth when he ate. And so my mother told him that, I don't know if the other pastor had done that, when he gave him the wafer, you know, break the wafer in two pieces and let him
because
that all such things, you know.
Yeah.
He knew that he was taking the Lord's Supper, and still there's something about this here, too big a bite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can see.
Just like he was always so scared, he'd run out of water.
Uh-huh.
Always had to have enough water there.
I guess just probably the damage to his brain caused those.
Sure,
you're kind of irrational fear.
He couldn't reason.
Mm-hmm.
But mother broached that subject. I didn't ask her. Maybe we should take that to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
They called insane asylum. Some do.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But we called hospital.
Mm-hmm.
In Hastings.
Mm-hmm.
So I. Mother broached it. She said, "Oh, I'm so afraid that this can't go on. You guys would He wasn't get a bit violent, but he was so restless, so unreasonable in his thinking. And Mother had put something, he used to always have pocket knife, but sometimes Mother had seen that he had no knife, couldn't do any hurt to himself or to the kids or anything. But of course, somebody was always around. But Mother was getting a little bit leery about that deal. She's the one that had me talk to the pastors at the conference that I was going there.
Yeah.
And they urged us by all means, the way that I'd explained to them how Dad was, that you better have the doctor, of course, has to sign something, you know, and and then on the doctor's and my witness, you know. And I don't know if Team on Two had to somehow. And it's so odd that Lincoln, when I was there once, Dad was called when somebody there, one of his friends, got so out of his mind too and had to be taken to the hospital. Dad had to somehow call the witness or something. Oh, maybe I shouldn't have talked so long.
Oh, no. That's okay. I always enjoy hearing, although it might get kind of late for your...
I sure love to smoke my cigar.